soccer, nonsense, and everything in between. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to a special edition of the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I am joined, as usual, by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, he's making his final preparations before his month-long trip to India. That's not a joke, that's what he's actually doing. He's my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant?
Yes.
How's it going?
Perfect. It's going fantastic.
Well, perfect.
Fantastically.
Perfect's better than fantastic, so you hit it right off the mark.
Have you taken your diphtheria injections yet?
I've taken all the shots, all the pills, ingested everything. I'm good.
I don't want to hear about what you've ingested, Grant. Also with us, he is a man who's making his final preparations for a six-hour trip to sleep. He's also a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and a senior editor at Sportsnet magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm angling towards more of an eight-hour trip to sleep.
Well,
6 hours, that's not... It's 8 hours. That's...
It's gonna take you 8 hours to get home, it sounds like.
Well, you know.
That's what the doctors recommend, but based on the time of day we're recording this, if you can get 8 hours out of that, your bosses may wonder why you're not coming into work at the scheduled time on Friday morning.
We're here extra late for the listener's benefit.
Exactly.
Yes, and that's why I specified off the top that this is a special edition of the Some Canadian Guys show. Those of you who listen regularly will notice that this episode is coming out quite a bit later than normal. That is because we are here in the Rogers Mega Complex late Thursday evening recording this show. We have just come from the big Canadian Soccer Association / Umbro event being held in downtown Toronto. Quite a bit of information was disseminated at this event. Information about where the men's national team would be playing this year, a centennial friendly game. Over the course of the evening, we also got a chance to speak to Stephen Hart, men's national team head coach, John Herdman, women's national team head coach, and Peter Montopoli, the general secretary of the CSA. We're also going to have our thoughts, on everything that came out there, as well as the new Umbro jersey, which was ostensibly the reason behind this event. So there's a lot going on there. Also later on in the show, we will bring you an interview we did with Canadian women's national team goalkeeper Karina LeBlanc. She tells us about the week that she's had, going from the high of qualifying to the Olympics down to the low of learning that women's professional soccer would not be playing in 2012. And somewhere in there, we hopefully get a few Celine Dion verses out of her. That was our hope coming in, and based on the fact that I've brought it up, obviously we did it, so you should stay tuned for that.
It's a little teaser for you.
Yeah. You should stay tuned. Also, we'll get to promotion relegation and taste the trivia later on in the show, but before any of that, gentlemen, Grant,
yep.
I'm going to turn this to you because another reason this is a special edition of the show is, as I said off the top, you are going to be departing soon, month-long trip to India that's going to be affecting our schedule here at the Some Canadian Guys show. We will not be recording a show next week. We will be coming back Thursday, February 16th. Jamie and I will be joined for a couple of weeks there on our regular schedule.
Well, I'm nervous about this, but okay.
Well, you think you're going to be usurped by the special guest host that we're going to have?
You never know.
Well, you do never know, but
I know. Yeah, probably.
Grant, we're actually outsourcing your co-hosting gig here on the show to India, which an interesting coincidence there.
We should outsource it to Grant while he's in India.
Yeah, why don't just outsource it to me?
Actually, if there's any way we can get you to give us like a live report on how like Tater Torterson is doing in the Indian Premier League now, that would actually be terrific.
I think we can arrange that.
Can we, or are you just saying that?
I'm just saying that.
Do you have any
idea? I don't know the logistics or the technology behind it.
You have a lot of faith in us.
Yeah. You mean a telephone? The technology?
Whoa, don't get crazy here, techno wizard.
I think getting a hold of Tater Torterson in a country of 1.1 billion people would probably be the more...
I don't have to get a hold of him. I just have to tell you what he's doing.
And apparently all you have to do is call him on this telephone you keep yammering on about.
Hello, I'd like to speak to Tater, please. Yes, right away.
Beep, 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 beep.
Grant, you're a well-traveled man. You've been many places in the world, but to my knowledge, India is not somewhere that you have been as of yet. Is that correct?
No, I've never been to India.
So, are you excited? What are you looking forward to?
I'm really jacked up, yeah. I'm the food, the weather.
The dysentery.
The dysentery, right? I'm looking forward
to that. Connected
to
the food and the weather.
Right. All of it. I'm just excited. You know, it's always good to go to a place you've never been before. It's an adventurous spirit you should have in life all the time.
That's the best place to visit, the best way to visit new places, really.
Grant,
how's that?
By going to places you've never been to before.
Grant, is there a chance that you'll become so enamored of Bangalore that you will just, you know, cast off the shackles of this, you know, lifestyle you're currently living and just set up shop over there permanently?
I doubt it.
Ooh, well, what kind of shop are we talking about?
I'll open some sort of business.
Yeah. Just some knickknacks.
I hear they're starting a lot of those over there this time of year.
I'll just set up a knickknack stall and hope that carries me till retirement.
Grant's knickknack stall. Or a car company.
Grant's Knicks and Necks.
Grant can fit in one of those little mini cars. What the hell do they call them?
Tata?
Yeah, they're like Todos or Tatas or whatever the hell they
are. Yeah, Tata.
Tata. Tatas?
I'm not going to sell the cars, but I might fit in one.
Yeah, you can just
start a rival company called Granta.
Gaga's.
No,
I'm not going to start a car company in India.
Well, we never know.
Not with that kind of attitude.
Grant, when you rejoin us in a month, you can give us a bit of an update on what kind of business endeavors you've gone upon in your time in India there. But in the time being, it's important for us to get in a whole whack load of stuff that we have to talk about on the show. It's going to be an extra special extended edition of the show, and we're missing a week there, so we need to get in as much of this as we can. So let's get right down to it. The stuff that we learned Thursday evening, most folks listening to this may have heard about it one way or another, but we will get into it and offer some reaction of our own here before we get into the interviews from the CSA heavy hitters that we have coming up a bit later.
The big guns.
The big guns. We are the medium-sized guns. Probably the most interesting piece of information, and this was suggested earlier in this week, but it was confirmed on Thursday evening. All three of the Canadian men's national team's World Cup qualifying home dates in 2012 will be played at BMO Field in Toronto. This is obviously something that is...
And the friendly.
And, well, yes, we'll get into the friendly. Okay, right, we'll get into the friendly a bit later. But the World Cup qualifiers, the important games, Honduras, Panama, Cuba, going on throughout 2012... there's some justification given behind that was provided by Peter Mentopoli and Stephen Hart in the interviews we'll get to a bit later. But Jamie, I'll ask you first. Hearing this, it was rumored, now it's confirmed. What are your thoughts upon hearing this?
I mean, there's two ways of taking this.
Take it one of those ways.
Oh, no. Okay.
Ketchup or mustard?
Yeah.
Pick one.
But I want relish. The way that they've explained it, what I would think is the objective way of looking at it, because it doesn't matter to Stephen Hart one way or another where they play the games. He just wants the best place. Like, he's not pro-Toronto or pro-Vancouver in a subjective way. But looking at it objectively, the way that he describes it, the time it takes for players to get there, the facilities that are available, their own familiarity with the stadium and the city and again, the facilities, it makes sense to have the games there.
But what do you think on a visceral level hearing this?
Well, I live in Toronto and it makes it just easier for me to get there. I don't have to go to Vancouver. Obviously, it's easier for me. And I understand that if I lived in Vancouver, I would be probably as happy as I am now to have them in Toronto. I would be doubly so angry if I was a person who lived in Vancouver, and that's perfectly understandable. And I certainly understand a person in Vancouver being really bitter and not understanding any kind of objective points being made in favor of playing all these games in Toronto.
Well, I'm sure folks in Vancouver understand these points, but it's like you just said.
No. They're awash in rage.
Ultimately, it's
based on Twitter tonight, they are awash in rage.
Yeah.
At least a few of them.
Yeah,
the loudest ones on Twitter are awash in rage.
But Grant, as Jamie just said, I mean, as a fan of the national team, of the Canadian program, I mean, it's impossible for any fan, and I mean that includes the three of us here, to be completely objective about this, because at the end of the day, you know, the arguments being made about what's the best surface, what are the travel time considerations, what do the players want, a fan of this team, wherever they may be in the country, wants the best possible opportunity to watch the team play, don't they?
Of course. No, I mean, for me, it's two things. You want my visceral reaction?
Ketchup, mustard.
Vancouver's being screwed. I mean, and they are. I mean, I can understand how people there would really be furious about this, because they had a really good showing for the women's pre-Olympic qualifying tournament. And then just to say, sorry, well, you don't get any games, I can understand why people would be really angry. The second thing for me, and I'm going to pull the Winnipeg card here, is that for
is that a card?
It's a card. The Winnipeg card is a card. And for me, it gets a little bit tiresome to hear the first and the second most entitled cities in the country constantly whinge at one another about these things. Like, yes, I understand Vancouver's upset, but there's a lot of other places in the country that have reason to be angry too.
Well, and that's the point. I mean, both of you guys have mentioned Toronto and Vancouver as if those were the only options available. Well, I mean, there are other cities that were in consideration here, right?
Montreal has reason to be upset.
And?
Moncton,
wherever. I suppose any. Edmonton?
Well,
they played games there in the past.
Well, the facility there really becomes an issue with Edmonton, but I don't know. I mean, Jamie, I saw this suggested by a fan tonight. Is this essentially a make or break moment for the fans in Toronto and in the Greater Toronto and Southern Ontario area? Because essentially, the CSA has said, "Look, we believe that, you know, yes, BMO Field represents a good venue for whatever reasons, but they're also relying on this belief that fans in Southern Ontario are going to come out and fill BMO Field and create a pro-Canadian atmosphere. If for whatever reason they are unable to do so, will that just justify a lot of the anger that fans in other parts of the country have towards a decision like this to put all of these games in Toronto?
I think certainly if you're one of those fans, it absolutely will. And if you're the Canadian Soccer Association, Toronto would have to have a really poor showing to not justify this decision, because by all the other reasons, they all still exist. Even if the fans don't quite fill it, or there's not exactly the showing that they want, Montreal doesn't have a good history of filling the stadium. And Vancouver is still exactly as far away as it is now, and it still has the same turf that the players don't like playing on. I mean, it's not even an objective thing there. The players themselves say, we don't like playing on field turf. And it was true of BMO Field when it had field turf, that players didn't want to play on it, and they played at Saputo. So,
but they also played on the turf at BMO Field, which kind of
they did, but they didn't like
undermines
it.
A bit of the argument that's made now that, well, you couldn't play a World Cup qualifier on turf. They played at BMO Field four years ago.
But the CSA is also mandated to have to play a certain number of games at BMO Field by virtue of it getting government money to be built, and it's officially the national stadium.
Hold on. Just going back to something you said, I just, to be perfectly fair, Toronto had a very good showing against Jamaica in a World Cup qualifying match in 2008, and these three games we've played in the past round, the first round of qualifying for the 2014 World Cup, but I think it's a bit I think everybody's about the same in terms of having a pretty crappy record for
I don't know. I still think
Canadian
Toronto
support in their stadium, right? I mean,
what the games that you've mentioned are the last four meaningful games that Canada's played. So the fact that Toronto had a good showing for those, actually, it says something. Obviously, the other
cities didn't have a chance, right?
But also, for friendlies, you can only count on so many people to come out for a Canadian soccer friendly. As much as we'd love to think that people are just queuing up to fill the stadium, it's not necessarily true. And Toronto did not that bad. The Ecuador game had a very good atmosphere, at least in the south end. There were still tons of Ecuadorian fans, the same of the Peru game, but I don't know if you could do better in another city.
But you're going to have fans in Vancouver who will point to the fact that you had 20, 25,000 fans out there in red cheering for a Canadian team in the just-completed Women's Olympic qualifying tournament, and they'll say, look, 20 to 25,000 Canadian fans coming out in January. It's snowing outside in Vancouver, which there I think means half a centimeter worth of snow. Coming out in these conditions to watch a team play, even the U.S., the final against the U.S. in that tournament, a glorified friendly, and they'll say, well, look, you know, we had 25,000 people here. Toronto has all these issues. Look, we can bring out 25,000 fans right off the hop for a game like this. Does that readily translate to a men's national team World Cup qualifier?
I'd love to say that it does, but I don't think so. There's just not the kind of competition for a women's game that there is for men's in terms of who's going to cheer for who. Mostly because, say, fans of we're playing Panama or Costa Rica or something, these fans, they just don't relate to their women's team in the same way that they would for their men's team. They're not going to come from the U.S., from all over the U.S., and drive to Canada or fly to Canada to support their women's team in the same way that they would the men's team and the way that they have shown that they do for their men's team.
We're going to be in tough against Honduras no matter where this game would have been played.
No, and that's absolutely true. But, I mean, it's just saying, say if we play the Canadian women's team against the Honduran women's team, the Honduran support is going to be so much different no matter where it's played than it would be for the same game with the men.
What if we played the Canadian men's team against the Honduran women's team?
That would be awesome.
That would be
the best idea. I mean, I think you would get mostly Canadian fans, and we'd probably most certainly win.
I just want to make
probably.
It clear. I just want to make it clear that I'm not really. I'm not anti Vancouver in any way, and I would love to see. I would literally very much love to see these games realistically played over. Let's say Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and be able to
and
say
Moncton.
We know we're going to get the same kind of turnout, all pro Canada in each city, but and have the same kind of facilities, and everyone's happy to play there. But it just doesn't seem that at present that's the case. And then Montreal, we mentioned, I think it's a case of just Saputo Stadium being ready.
Yeah, Saputo Stadium, of course, undergoing renovations at present. They definitely would not be ready for the World Cup qualifier in June. Most likely would be ready for the ones in September and October. Perhaps the CSA just figured that they couldn't take that chance and needed to know that they had a venue ready. But Grant, something yes. that's going to additionally burn the buns of fans across the country. It's something
sounds tasty.
Something, taste the soup, taste the buns. Something you brought up earlier is the big CSA centennial match to celebrate its centennial year will be played on June 3rd against the USA. This had been rumored for a long time. The CSA had theoretically been looking to get a big-name opponent, possibly someone like England or France. Supporters had said all along, and this is something we brought up in the past, the USA would make the ideal opponent because, you know, it's not a situation where the stadium is going to be overrun with English or French fans, and the way to get Canadian people out, Canadian sports fans out cheering for Canada is to put them up against the USA. This game, of course, though, will also be played at BMO Field in Toronto less than a week prior to the first World Cup qualifier of 2012 against Cuba. So, Grant?
Yes?
Upon hearing all of this news about this game, you can play the Winnipeg card or any other card in the deck that you may have.
I've already played that.
Well, then you can pick another one and say, what are your thoughts about hearing this announcement?
Well, no, it's funny because we were speaking earlier about visceral reactions, and when we were at the event tonight and that announcement was made, I actually watched you when they said that we're going to play the game against U.S. at BMO Field in Toronto as well, and you sort of almost spasmed. You had this weird sort of like buckshot reaction. I can't even really describe it.
You're attempting to replicate it again, forgetting that this is an audio only show.
It always gets me. But I think that kind of says it all. Like I guess now when I think about it, it does make sense that if this game is going to be played, what is it, June 3rd?
Yeah.
So close to these other games, it doesn't really make sense to play the US in a friendly match in Vancouver and then fly all the way across the country to start playing World Cup qualifiers, even though I don't actually think that's that long of a flight. So I guess looking at it that way, it does make sense, but just, I really thought going into this thing tonight that, okay, they're going to announce all these, the World Cup qualifying matches will be in Toronto and a bone will be thrown somewhere to another city in the country. That bone was not thrown.
There was no bone. There was no bone thrown. Jamie, we've, you know, been talking for the last little while about the, you know, the issues with the venues and the different cities here. So maybe I'll just ask, is some credit due to the CSA for landing the U.S. as the opponent, which I think both for the historical significance of it and also because it did seem to most supporters as the logical choice for landing the USA as this opponent at this time of the year for a match like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely the best. If they hadn't have thought of this themselves, which I can't imagine that they wouldn't have, then it seemed that they were listening to the supporters who very much wanted this to be the match. And obviously it benefits the Americans who get to play a CONCACAF rival and then do a little bit of warming up themselves. I don't know if, like, I guess the idea is to replicate Canada's first official international match, which was against the Americans, which we won, apparently. I don't know if this is the specific anniversary of it, because this is one game, like Grant, I thought was going to be played somewhere else, and I kind of would like it to be played somewhere else, because you don't, I mean, as much as it makes it easier for me personally to go and see the games because I happen to live in Toronto, I don't want Canadian soccer to just be a Toronto thing, obviously. I mean, you want it to spread around the country and you want the game to grow accordingly. And I thought that this might be one that they would play in Vancouver or in Montreal or wherever. And it makes sense given the time of the game, the date of the game that they have to do in Toronto because it's so close to the actual World Cup qualifying matches, but it doesn't make sense that they feel the need to put it that close.
I think what's important to remember as we look at issues like this is, as I said earlier, it's impossible for anyone who's a fan of the program to look at anything objectively. I think that all of the fans in Toronto and in the Toronto area who now so vociferously back the fact that BMO Field has grass, BMO Field is convenient in terms of travel situations, if there was another city that had that ideal field situation and those ideal travel conditions, they would not be, you know, saying, well, you know, you've got the perfect conditions, have the games there. As I say, people across the country want to be able to see the national teams play in as convenient a way as possible. You know, as with anything else, I mean, it's completely unfortunate that not everyone can be satisfied at all given times, but hopefully, as we go forward, there will be an opportunity for as many folks as possible to see the national teams play.
And if anything, this just shows that there is a hunger to go out and see the Canadian national team. Any kind of backlash against this is, in a twisted way, a very good thing.
So I guess on that note, let's have some backlash. Let's encourage the backlash.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know
Anger, frustration.
Hey, listen, passion is better than indifference. So as long as people are out there and talking about the program, that's kind of the most important thing. When it comes to seeing the national teams, the Canadian women's national team, we did not get details tonight on where they may be playing in 2012, but we did get a little bit of information out of CSA General Secretary Peter Montopoli about what the Canadian women's national team's plans may be for 2012. We're going to go right now into a number of interviews that we did at this event tonight. Coming up first off is CSA General Secretary Peter Montopoli. We are here with Peter Montopoli, General Secretary of the Canadian Soccer Association. Peter, thanks for speaking to us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
First question, saw you eating some of the poutine that was being offered at the event tonight a little early on. How would you gauge that poutine you had?
Well, you know what? I don't think it's as good as it is in Ottawa, but I'll take it because I'm hungry.
Is that a common food on Metcalfe Street, the poutine?
I don't know if it's on Metcalfe, but in Ottawa or Gatineau, it would certainly be, yes.
This is a Canadian soccer event. It should have the best of Canadian food, you'd think.
I think it does.
There were no beaver tails here, though, so that's a pretty glaring omission, I would say.
I guess so, yes, I would say so.
Now, earlier on tonight, you mentioned something about a Canadian supporters membership program. Could you speak a little bit about what that would actually entail? Is that something that would be in conjunction with the Voyageurs, the Canadian supporters group?
Yes, we would be looking at the Voyageurs to assist us in the creation, development, and selling of that plan. Basically, what we're looking to do is have our own in-house kind of membership program, similar to maybe what U.S. Soccer has, so that we can communicate with our supporters and offer them ticket rates, interviews with coaches, opportunities to meet players, as various promotional activities that ordinarily were not available to the general public, but through the kind of program that we're looking to put together would be kind of an added value benefit.
And would this involve kind of some kind of a more formal arrangement that for the Voyageurs themselves to limit people from outside, which we've seen before, fans from the opposition coming in and getting, you know, ticket passwords and stuff like that?
No, I think it's really domestic. We're just looking at Canadian supporters. We're not looking to engage anybody foreign.
Oh, no, but would it involve like formalizing the Voyageurs into a higher degree?
Yeah, it would be. I think we're still trying to work through how it looks and what it's named, but I can see that happening, yes.
Now, a question that some people have asked, you know, it was mentioned on stage, the importance of creating that home field advantage for the Canadian team where they do play. Are there any measures that may be in the process of consideration in terms of attempting to limit the sales to fans of the opposition? Is there any way that something like that could be practically implemented?
Yeah, so at BMO Field, if we look at what we tried to do this summer, was we limited during the World Cup matches the opposing country's ticket sales to the north new stands. And that's where we're limiting sales for the opposition. If you're from the opposition, we would sell you tickets in the north stands and control that environment. And that's where we would direct everybody. The rest of the horseshoe would be Canadian supporters, and that's what we're trying to implement.
Now, when you say control that environment, are you speaking about something to the extent of communicating with security at BMO Field in such a way as to restrict where fans, for instance, wearing certain colors can and can't go in the stadium?
No, I don't think in Canada you can do that. But what you're trying to do is at the control point of ticket purchase to signify which supporter you are, and if you are Honduras, you should be buying here. If you're Canada, you should be buying here. So right at the control point of buying tickets, that's where you should be, right?
And so we're not talking about putting some kind of an airtight bubble on the opposition supporters section?
We're not selling Canadian supporters sections in the north end. So that was empty for some of the matches last year, in 2011, only because we're not selling those tickets to Canadian supporters. That is reserved. And we have to, by FIFA regulations, allow the visiting team X amount of tickets to be sold to their country, and that's what we plan to do.
Can you, in terms of, you say, like, at the control point, is it possible to tell who is a Honduran supporter and who is a Canadian supporter?
Yeah, I know that's a tough question and answer, but the key question comes from Ticketmaster to ask that question. Are you a supporter of Canada or Honduras or Panama or Cuba? And if so, then we direct you to sit here. And that's the key message that has to come out. But there is a window of opportunity as a pre-sale, and we would ask the Canadian community to take advantage of their pre-sale window to buy as many tickets as possible. So it's a double-edged sword. I know you guys have hit on the Canadian Soccer Association that, hey, why is it that opposing countries have tickets? There is a reverse question. Why isn't the Canadian public, have they not bought the tickets? Obviously, the tickets are available to be bought. You've got to buy them. If you're Canadian, you want to see these matches, you live in Toronto, you live in Ontario, you live in Southern Ontario, buy the tickets.
Now, one thing you bring up there is one of the common criticisms that fans outside of Toronto have about the games being placed in Toronto. They say that traditionally a lot of fans of the opposition have come out to these games that are in Toronto. Is that a matter of, as you say, just getting momentum going within the fans that are in the Toronto area and getting them just organically to buy up tickets and fill those seats?
Well, Toronto area, Southern Ontario, including Ottawa. And I mean, you know, the community here is strong enough and large enough to support 20,000 seats. We've seen that. And we believe now in this round of qualification, as we saw maybe in a bit of 2008 here in Toronto when we had the Jamaica match. Yes, there were a certain amount of Jamaicans, but it was a full stadium, and I think there was still great support for Canada. And we want to see that increase in 2012, and certainly there's the numbers to support 20,000 tickets sold.
And just quickly, one last question about the women's program. John Herdman, during the event tonight, mentioned that he sort of alluded to the fact that it would be good to see the Canadian women's team playing on home soil in 2012.
Right.
There was no official announcement made tonight, but is that something that is in the works potentially for this year?
Well, yeah, we'd like to have two matches at the very least. One is an Olympic send-off, but one as their centennial match, and we're still working through that. I think what we didn't say tonight was we had to really wait until the qualifier was completed to allow the plans to kind of unfold and come into place, to place those plans ahead. Not that we were not going to qualify. We were definitely going to qualify, but the other countries were not going to sign anything until we knew that we had qualified, because if we're not qualifying, it's a whole different program that John wanted to put together. So in saying that, We just qualified. Great work by John, the players, and now we put the rest of those plans together. I'd like to think we could at least host two matches in Canada before that.
Will you tip your hand at all as to where those matches may take place?
I would probably say not in Toronto.
That will make a lot of people very happy, I imagine. Yeah. Peter Metopoli, General Secretary of the CSA, thank you for speaking to us.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
We're joined now by John Herdman, head coach of the Canadian Women's National Team. John, thank you for speaking with us.
Yeah, thank you very much for your time.
And, oh, our time.
Yeah, your time.
You're the one doing us the favor.
Yeah, I mean, we get our plenty of time.
Yeah,
there's free drinks on the go.
Well, you've got a glass of something in your hand. What have you got there?
Just water.
Oh, of course. It's interestingly colored water, but we'll move on from that. First question I got to ask, not about tactics or anything like that, but a video that's gone viral about your team, celebration after the Mexico win.
No, Celine Dion.
Celine Dion, the power of love. You're someone that has come to Canada just recently. How did it feel to be caught up in that Canadian stereotype maelstrom mere months after you landed on these shores?
Man, I can't believe that's gone viral. I think I was in there pretending I knew the words. I did actually know the words.
It was a song.
It was a song from the 80s. I actually remember. It was one of the first LPs my mom bought. And I remember her playing it in the house and the whole family singing it. So it all sort of came back to us. Pretty cool.
We actually managed to get Karina LeBlanc to sing it on the podcast, to sing a line from the song on the podcast. We're not going to make you do that now, though.
We're not going to make you do anything. No. But
if you want to sing a line from the song.
Oh, I think I need a couple of more glasses of water.
A couple of more glasses of that funny water.
I just want to mention, I don't know if this is the best or worst part about that. That video is now on Celine Dion's official website.
Yes.
It's on her official website, so.
Yeah, well.
that is your official welcome to Canada. Man. I believe you are now a full-fledged citizen. You can now run for parliament, every such thing. Karina, when we were speaking to her, she mentioned that one of the players with the greatest singing voices on the team was Desiree Scott. That's a player who really stuck out to a lot of fans in the Olympic qualifying tournament. What would you have to say about the performance that she put forth in that Olympic qualifying tournament?
Yeah, she was quite special, and it thoroughly deserved. I mean, for any kid coming up through the sport, this is a player that's been in and out the team and just showed some real resilience. I mean, she's an honest player. She was given a chance at the Pan Ams. She helped the team achieve the gold. I mean, you hear about all the typical names around the Pan Am gold medal, but Desi was right at the heart of that, and I think this was a great opportunity for her to break out in front of our home nation. And it's one of them stories as a coach. You give someone a shirt and they just won't give you it back. And what a special kid. And if she didn't make it as a footballer, I think she'd be pushing Celine Dion for album sales as well.
Are you saying that Desiree Scott showed up at camp and just stole someone's jersey and refused to give it back?
Well, I'll tell you what, when she stepped on that pitch at the Pan Ams, everyone sort of looked at us a bit sideways when I put her in at the deep lie position. And, you know, once she stepped in there, there was no taking her out. She was wonderful.
Now, Desiree Scott is a player, one of the many players who has been given a chance to shine ever since you've come on board. And in both the Pan Ams and the Olympic qualifying tournament, if I'm not mistaken, I think every player that was on the roster got at least a little bit of time on the field. Is that a specific MO of yours in terms of giving all of the players, as many players as possible, a chance to show what they can do in a big situation?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely crucial. You know, it's a team sport, and you know, if they're going to sacrifice 4 years of their life to come and play for Canada, then you know, the last thing they want to be doing is sitting on a bench. I think, you know, you've got to give those players time and opportunity to step up. If we hadn't given Desi those opportunities in the Pan Ams, we just wouldn't have seen the talent that she had and the potential. So I think it's the same for all those players. I think, you know, when I look back, there's certain things I got wrong in terms of the selection. So it's about, you know, picking and choosing the right players at the right time, and that's a big learning for me.
Something you mentioned a little bit earlier on tonight was something that slipped my mind. Give me a moment. Clearly, I've had a couple of glasses of water myself. You mentioned the importance of home field advantage and what that was able to do for you in Vancouver. Talk a little bit about what it was like to you know, for someone who's somewhat new to the country. You may not fully appreciate the extent to which a pro-Canadian crowd is an exotic idea to us. I mean, the idea of having an actual home crowd is just remarkable. So what kind of impact did having that audience for the team have on the players during that tournament in Vancouver?
So when the Southside has kicked it off, you know, there was a group in the left-hand corner that just never stopped singing. You know, and had some really cool songs as well that kept you quite amused on the touchline. I think "We Dream of Kale and Kyle" was one of my favourites. So, you know, you have a good laugh while you're listening. But I thought what was really interesting was, you know, the crowd in the semi-final game. You know, they went quiet when the Mexicans were getting on top. I mean, they were so absorbed, and it was almost like, you know, our identity was revealed. You know, when the pressure came on, everyone sort of sunk into the chairs, and the players did as well. But, you know, give them another 5 minutes, and once we got back on top, they were with us right to the end. But what I enjoyed the most was when we were getting bashed against the States, they never give up on the team. And that was really cool. We had 25,000, you know, shouting "Go Canada, go!" You know, when we were in our worst situations. And I think, you know, if we can grab that through the Olympic Games, and we know we've got that support, I think the players will push out another couple of percent.
The thing that you did mention earlier on in the evening was the impact that the suspension of the WPS season would have on your preparation for the Olympics. Some of your top players obviously have been playing in WPS, and that's going to affect them this year. You mentioned some of the things that you may be trying to do in light of the suspension of the WPS season. Could you just tell folks what you have in mind in terms of ways you may try to adjust to the loss of that professional environment for these players?
I mean, it's a tough situation. When I set my stall out early in the year, you know, I said very clearly to the players, so last year, that I expect players to be playing in professional environments. I think that's, you know, where you avoid that ceiling effect where, you know, you don't grow taller than your best player. I think the key now is that we've got to relook at that. The WPS, you know, was hopefully going to house around five or six of our core players, you know, with another three or four up in Sweden, and then the others would be in the W League. So, I mean, you can manage with part of your squad in the W League, but you can't manage, you know, 80, 90% there. You know, it's not to say the W League's not going to be strong this year. It's just, if you want to win a gold medal, you've got to be competing at the same levels as those players overseas. So, really, really important that we look at a strategy that takes us to the podium.
You know, you were speaking before about wanting to have players in professional environments, and with WPS being shut down for the year, that being a little more difficult. Have you considered, I don't know if there's any way that you know, if whether you have connections or any way that this could be facilitated, but we've seen a number of Canadian players make the jump going to play in Europe in the last couple of years. Is that something that you may try to push your players towards if possible, or is it kind of up to them?
Yeah, I mean, I've just helped Christina Julien, you know, head into Sweden. I think she's on her way to Sweden in these next couple of weeks. But it's a tough one now, because the core of the players again are going to be based in, you know, North America, Canada, and you know, my mindset originally was WPS, Germany, Sweden. And now that the WPS has folded, it's almost like, well, if you send a couple of players that way and a couple that way, you actually kill yourself, because you don't have a core group to work with in Canada. So, I mean, we've got to look at the strategy now and say, is it better to start residing in Canada for the last 3 months building up to the Olympics, or do we still keep pushing to take the girls into Sweden or Germany?
Well, I suppose the only question then is, being a Magpies fan yourself, does Newcastle have a women's team, and do you have any links there that you could push the players towards?
No, I'm not a big fan of that English league. It's still in its infancy, and there's not enough quality players, I think, playing in the structure there. But I think Newcastle, I don't think they've got a good women's team. Sunderland have, believe it or not. I think they've been to the FA Cup final, which guts us.
It's gotta hurt. It's gotta hurt to say that. One last question. You've said a couple of times now in the lead up to the Olympics that you believe it's a realistic projection that the Canadian team could win a medal. Now, at the Women's World Cup last year, expectations were pretty high about what the Canadian team could do, and of course, things didn't end up as people planned. Is there any worry on your part about setting these high aspirations for the Olympics, or are you just, you know, saying what you feel?
Listen, I think you've got to look at the players. You've got to see what they want. It's a goal that they've set themselves. They want a podium. You know, some of them are coming to their end of their career, and for them, it's probably their last chance to really win something. And you know, I've got to go with the players. You know, if my heart says X and my head says Y, I've got to go with what the players are saying. You know, regardless of what I think. And if that's their goal, I'll do my damnedest to help them achieve it. I think the game against the US puts things in perspective, and I think it's not a bad thing. I think it helps the public recognise that we're not quite there yet. And if we'd won that game against the US, I think people would have expected a guaranteed gold, and it would have been unrealistic, because I still don't think we're at that level of the US at this stage. We've got a bit of a work to do in 2012. Players need to step up on the physical level. We need to really establish a very clear tactical plan that can really topple these, you know, tier one teams, the US, the Japanese. And I think if we do the diligence right, we'll get there. I've got no doubt we've got the raw material to be able to take us to the podium.
That's been John Herdman, head coach for the Canadian Women's National Team. John, thank you for speaking to us, and I think I know the answer, but is there any chance you'll give us a little bit of Celine Dion before you leave us?
I think I'll leave that to your YouTube footage. I think I've embarrassed myself enough on that, people taking advantage of the coach in times of jubilation, so I won't get caught like that again, even after a couple of more of these waters.
Yes, enjoy the rest of your glass of water, John. Thanks for taking the time.
So the next interview we've got here is with Canadian men's national team head coach Stephen Hart. You're going to notice when you listen to this, there's a little bit of issue with the audio there. Of course, being at a crowded public event, it's not always conducive to getting the best audio, and even the questions themselves aren't great, but that's what happens at the end of a very crowded evening. But give it a listen, Canadian men's national team head coach Stephen Hart.
So there was a lot that came out tonight at this event, obviously, concerning World Cup qualifying, and sure that you've been asked a lot of the same questions over and over about the location of the games. So I'll ask the same question over and over about the location of the games. And unfortunate, but we kind of have to. The three games being in Toronto last year, the three games being in Toronto again this year. There are probably fans elsewhere in the country that are not going to take very kindly to it. So maybe you could just say in your own words, why you specifically or the players felt that it was the right move to have the three games this year in Toronto?
Well, I mean, we looked at all the scenarios. One of the scenarios was that we definitely didn't want to play on an artificial surface. The players are not comfortable on it, and even though Honduras and Panama may not also be comfortable on it, our players are not comfortable on it. So that was one issue. The second issue was a travel issue, which is huge, because of the time frame of the games and the period of time to get players in, have proper sort of preparation or maximize your preparation. We wanted to cross as few time zones as possible, and of course the ability to fly out of that area directly into the game sites that we're going to. So we felt, you know, all things being said, it was best to play games in Toronto.
Now, I mean, fingers crossed, let's say Canada makes the hex. We have, I think there's 5 home games in Canada. Do you think at that point you would look at moving some games around, maybe even on the East Coast, closer to Europe?
Well, I mean, we did look at potentially playing the games on the East Coast. You have certain restrictions that you have to fall under with FIFA. There was nowhere we could play the game. Of course, there's Montreal and Moncton. The if we went to Moncton, we'd be going into a situation where everything would be new for the players. There's been no familiarity whatsoever. Plus the added difficulty of getting them there, of course. So, I mean, that was a factor. Moncton itself, in terms of having the pitch ready and, you know, all of that were things that we would definitely consider once we get through this phase of the competition.
One thing that was mentioned to us as well in terms of the selection of Toronto for the games was the availability of training facilities that the players are familiar with. Was that factored into the decision as well?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, we looked at everything, and I mean, let's be fair. Our main concern with Toronto was that potentially we wouldn't get the Canadian fan base. But I mean, I was in Edmonton when we played Honduras back in the 2004, I think, 2005 qualification, and they had more Hondurans there than they had Canadians. I mean, that's a fact. So, you know, and now that facility is turf, right? So, I mean, these decisions were not easy decisions, but we felt all things calculated, this was the best thing to do.
Stephen, we're sure that you've had your ear talked off tonight and you've had to talk other people's ears off, so we appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. Stephen Hart, head coach of the Canadian men's national team, thanks for speaking with us. I can only imagine people are probably getting sick of that bridge muzak there, which is unfortunate because I'll have to listen to it a couple of more times before the show is done, because we still have to get to an interview we did with Karine LeBlanc, Canadian women's national team goalkeeper. She's got quite a bit to say, and she's an interesting person to listen to. She's also an interesting person to hear sing, which we may get a little bit of there. Couldn't get it out of John Herdman. Hopefully we'll be able to get it out of her. We already recorded it, so we know how it ended up. But before we get to that, gentlemen, Jamie, I'll turn to you first. Part and parcel of the event that we had on Thursday evening was about all of the important news as it related to the schedules for the men's and women's national teams. But it was also a matter of unveiling the new kits for 2012, the Centennial Canadian Soccer Association kits from Umbro Canada. There's a big dramatic video that we watched at this event, which focused inordinately on Simeon Jackson's crotch, but there was also the matter, the very important matter.
Glad I was ordering drinks when that happened.
Of the kit itself. So, Jamie, you've seen it live and in person. You felt it with your own fingers. What do you think?
It looks pretty good, to be perfectly honest. I mean, what can we say? I mean, there's only so many things you can do with essentially a T-shirt and shorts, but I remember the last kit launch was a huge thing for Canadian soccer fans because they were so unhappy with the kind of Adidas, you know, cookie cutter jersey that Canada had for so long. And then the reaction was just kind of crickets, tumbleweed. And then the jerseys have since kind of grown on everybody. But this one seems to be a lot more immediately. I like that.
Are you talking about last time there were crickets? Because I mean, it seemed last time with the chevrons, there was definitely a lot of passionate. There was a lot of negative response to that as well off the hop. But I think once the players got out there with the jerseys on and fans got to see it, you know, live and in person, or on television or however else, you know, they came around to it. Grant,
yes,
you're a fashionista,
of course.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, this one, as I said, I was at the bar when this video was on, but I remember hearing that something about the Sonic DNA being sewn into the shirt. That was part of the video.
Uh-huh. That is kind of a neat little feature, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm still not even sure what it, does that mean?
They secretly, the Sneaky Devils, recorded the Canadian supporters section, the Voyagers, at one of the home games from the World Cup qualifying round that we've just passed. Recorded the Voyagers singing the national anthem and then took the audio wave, the image of that, and have sewn that in, that image of, you know, like the lines that the audio wave does in a recording kind of program, and they've sewn that into the jersey.
So you mentioned this earlier, if you actually put your ear to the shirt, is it like kind of like a seashell or something?
You can hear Stephen Hart. You can hear his plans. So we can't let any.
That's no good.
No Panamanian fans are allowed to get their hands on these. No Hondurans.
So Grant's going to be wearing one of these jerseys. Jamie, you're just going to stick your ear to his side, and all you'll be hearing is ideas. Ideas.
That's your best Stephen Hart impression?
Well, I'm not. I mean, it's disrespectful. I mean, you know, it's.
It's not at all. All right, do a non Stephen Hart but Trinidadian accent.
That's even more disrespectful, and it's not. I'm not imitating one guy. I'm imitating an entire culture.
You're really spreading the disrespect out, so it doesn't really affect anyone.
I'll just do a human accent. Well, I'm doing it right now.
I don't like the idea that Jamie has his head to my. What did you say? To my side, listening to my shirt. That's just weird.
Yeah,
on top of everything else.
I don't see why I won't own one of these shirts myself. I'll probably
listen to your own shirt.
Go out and buy one. I'll listen to my own, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You can all listen to your own shirts. But you can do that later. For the time being, we're going to listen to something that is much more interesting.
Listen to this.
Yeah, much more interesting than listening to a shirt. Canadian Women's National Team goalkeeper Karina LeBlanc. Joining us now on the line from Los Angeles, California, Canadian Women's National Team goalkeeper, Karina LeBlanc. Karina, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Been quite of a whirlwind week for you over the last 7 days, so let's start with probably the most momentous part of that, which was last Friday, Canada with the victory over Mexico, qualifying for the 2012 Summer Olympic Games. At that moment, at the end of that game, knowing that you'd clinched Olympic qualification, how did that feel?
You dream about a moment like that as a kid, and it was 100 times better. You know, just having the opportunity to play in front of my friends and family, and, you know, kids from my high school came out, and it was just so special. And, you know, just knowing the magnitude of that moment and just looking up in the stands, and, you know, it's almost like I wanted to pause everything. I just wanted that moment to last forever, and it was just, it's hard to put into words, but it was honestly like you dream of something like that, and it was just better than I could ever have dreamed of it being.
Hi, Karina. This was asked of Christine Sinclair right after the game, but how much does this feel like a bit of redemption from a World Cup that didn't really live up to your dreams?
I think we still have some ways to go, but it's the right start. You know, I mean, we started the Pan Am Games and we came back, and you know, to beat Brazil, you know, top team at that time. I mean, to get that kind of result just makes you feel like we're moving forward. And then for this to happen, you know, it's, again, we're moving in the right direction. And the World Cup was just so disappointing for us. We felt like we failed on so many different levels. And, you know, to come in and have this tournament at home in front of the fans. And, you know, at the beginning of the tournament, there was like 7,000 people there, which was amazing. But the way the tournament grew, it just... we feel like we're moving in the right direction. And, you know, with John at the helm and him directing and leading us to, you know, so many different things, we think that we have a lot that we can't achieve. I mean, obviously the result on Sunday showed that we have some things to do and a lot of homework to do. But, you know, it's one of those things where we're moving in the right direction, and the World Cup is almost like a thing of the past.
Hi, Karina. So after the big, you know, you had this big emotional high of qualifying for the Olympics, how did it feel after the game against the Americans?
You know, I think we're a pretty positive team. We, you know, you hear so many stories. I mean, we had some Olympians come in and chat with us after, and, you know, the story they said is that, you know, there were things so close to the Olympics that happened to them that were wake-up calls. And I think for us, it wasn't a result we wanted, you know, especially at home and with so many people tuning in and so many people there live. We wanted to really make Canada proud. I mean, walking away from this, we know we made Canada proud, but even for ourselves, you know, we wanted to get that result. But at the end of the day, we still have 176 days before the Olympics. We know we have a lot of work to do. We know we need to go places where we've never been as athletes before. We need to push each other more and push our own selves more so that we can accomplish those goals that we want to accomplish come the time of the Olympics.
You mentioned that there were some Olympians that came in to speak to the team. I saw a photo that you put out on Twitter of yourself with a couple of other Canadian Olympians, Cassie Campbell and Mark Tewksbury, both athletes who have had success in their respective sports. What kinds of things were they telling you in preparation for the Olympics?
Obviously they shared their stories with us, you know, the great moments where they actually won the gold medal. And, you know, I mean, Mark talked us through the actual race, and, you know, then he showed it to us. And even though we knew what happened, it was, you know, just listening to him tell it from his point of view and him saying all the good, but then all the bad, the things that you never hear about that happened that can be a distraction, and how the Olympic Games is a phenomenal event, but like something, for example, is the opening ceremonies. That's something that we probably won't get to go to because we play the next day, and also we play 2 days before that. It's just about understanding that it is the Olympic Games. It is something you've dreamed about all your life, but, you know, you're there to do a job, and you're there to represent this country at the highest level. And, you know, they really just inspired us, to be honest, to make us make sure that we step outside of that comfort zone, out of the box that we usually train in, but to challenge ourselves to, for the next, you know, 176 days, to never do anything normal, and to come together as a team, and so that we can accomplish what they accomplished. I mean, just listening to them talk, I felt like I was a little kid again. You know, there's moments that I just wanted to be like, oh my God, I want to do that, you know? And then realize, you know what, I am here and I can do that. And there are some of us who were at the last Olympic Games, obviously, so there are things that we learned, but to have that type of experience, especially when they've had so much success, and them to share their time with us, to come in and just talk to us and say, hey, you know what, you got to believe in yourself, you got to be able to work harder than you've worked before, and you got to just be able to just commit to this and in all aspects of your life. I think that was the biggest message that we all came away with.
And well, you're talking about inspiration, and from what we've been hearing, one of the big things that John Herdman has brought to the team is a different kind of mental focus and a bit of psychology that helps you just kind of push through the barriers in the game. Is that something that you've noticed and something that you've felt as a team has been a bit of a difference maker?
I mean, absolutely. John's given us a lot of confidence. You know, he talks about crossing the line, and, you know, he said, you know, when the game starts, it's about crossing that line and always performing above that 80%, you know, and I think that's something that we need to do more consistently. I mean, in the past we'd come out and have one great game and then another poor game, and I think that's what John's working on with us, is to consistently be at the top. And I think that comes in when we're together as a team, but also he challenges us when we're away. And I mean, he wants us to be in professional environments, he wants us to be in places where we can have a balance in life so that we are truly happy in everything we're doing, but also challenging ourselves. And I think he's brought in this confidence where, I mean, like you saw, just everybody got to play at this qualifications and everybody did well. And I think that's because John's trying to show us, like, okay, everyone's good. We're good enough. We have the depth. We have the commitment. Now let's go. Let's stop, you know, holding ourselves back. Let's stop being nice about this. Let's step up and be the players and team that we always have said we are. And I think that's one of the great things that he's brought to us.
So, Katrina, we were talking about Karina, I'm sorry. I caught myself. On the subject of mental focus, just to go back to the American game, I mean, obviously they're an immensely talented team, but I think it's been something like 10 years now since Canada has beat them. Do you think at some point, like, it becomes a psychological block?
You know, the 4-0 is disappointing, obviously. I mean, if you look at the stats at halftime, though, they had 4 chances and we had, I think, 3 or 4. So, I mean, they were just clinical in their finishing. And I think the rivalry that's there between USA and Canada, we don't ever step on the field saying, oh boy, we're going to lose. You know, we step on the field saying, this is the time. This is the time that we're going to change that record. This is the time we're actually going to beat them at the game. And, you know, going back to what I said earlier, it's about us recognizing there's a gap, but, you know, now we lost and it sucks, but, you know, what better thing for it to happen now than, you know, at the Olympics? And I think we have that mentality of, okay, fine. You know, how embarrassing was that? They came into our house and they beat us 4-0. You know, now we have that extra bite so that when and if, or whenever we do face them again, may it be the Olympics, which, again, last Olympics games, they kicked us out in the overtime win, you know, that's just going to create more animosity within ourselves and more reason to just really want to go out there. And we don't step on the field thinking, oh, God, it's the Americans and we're going to lose. I mean, now we're like, okay, it's the Americans and they've embarrassed and they've beaten us one too many times and it's time for us to step up. So, like I said before, I think it's awful that it happened, but we're looking at it as, okay, you know what, there's a reason it happened, and the next time hopefully it will be different.
Yeah, prior to the start of the tournament, I mean, we were talking about the qualifying tournament on this show of ours, and we, you know, a lot of people expected it would end up being Canada and the U.S., and we thought maybe your team could pull something similar to what happened back in 2002, you know, bearing a little good luck charm under the pitch. It would have been tough with field turf. But going ahead to the Olympic Games, is there something that might you follow that tradition set down with the Lucky Looney in 02? I mean, if your team was to bury something under the grass in London to give yourselves that extra little bit of motivation, what do you think it would be? A Celine Dion CD, maybe?
I'm going to go with Celine Dion, just because we love her.
The CD, right?
Yeah, not bury her. You're not going to bury her under the grass.
No, the song. Did you guys see the YouTube video?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we were going to ask, it couldn't possibly be more stereotypically Canadian to have a Celine Dion song going. What's the story behind that song and why it was picked for the post-game celebration?
You know, locker room before the game, obviously we all have our songs that we love to listen to that get us going, but then after, you know, it just, you know, it was one of those things where after the game you try to sing something a little bit more mellow and something that everybody knows, and I mean it just happened to be Celine Dion, and everyone's just picked up on that, and you know, we've been doing that for a while, and I mean, we know we're not going to win, you know, Canadian Idol out there with our voices. I mean,
you never know. There have been some pretty bad winners on that show.
Hey, you know what? You obviously have not heard me sing. But, you know, I mean, we have Desiree Scott and Aaron McLeod who actually have fantastic voices. But the rest of us, I don't think we're claiming anything. But it's just one of those things that just brings us together. And we usually sing it after a big win just because, you know, it brings us together, and we're in a good mood, and, you know, we're hoping that tape somehow falls into the right hands, and Celine gives us a call or something and just says hi or bonjour, whatever she wants to say to us.
Maybe she'll come and give a pregame pep talk.
Hey, she can do it. We for sure would take that on. I mean, honestly, I mean, we had one of our teammates wrote into Ellen with the video and said, hey, help us get to Celine. But it's one of those things. I mean, every team has their little thing, and for us, I mean, we like to sing, we like to play pranks, we like to have fun, but you know, it's just, and I just thought people would enjoy seeing it, so, and it turns out they have, whether they're making fun of us or not. But you know, going back to your question, I mean, I think what's special about our team is how close we are, and you know, we leave all egos at the door, and that's one of the things I think will help us be successful in the long run. You know, I mean, you have Christine Sinclair, who in every right way, she could step on the field and say, it's about me and I'm the best player and, you know, whatnot, but she doesn't do that. And she leads in that way. And we all buy into that. And we truly are a family. And, you know, I mean, that what you guys saw in that video, I mean, it's like that for so many other things, you know. So I think the chemistry that we have as a team is going to take us far.
So just before we move on from the subject, is there any song that you sing before a big game?
Oh, yeah, we do. We have a couple songs that we all do. We love Man in the Mirror, Michael Jackson. That's actually Stinky's favorite. We have tape that some of the girls put together, and it's got like a little remix, and it has about at least 40 seconds, and everybody gets to put in their favorite song. So before every big tournament, we'll do that. So,
You mentioned that in there. Are you guys going to make a special trip to Craven Cottage to see the statue outside there?
Oh, I hope so.
All right, when you're in England for the Olympics,
I sure hope so. I mean, and that's one of the things we're talking about. I mean, John, we're going in a couple days early to be able to really take in the Olympic Games and for the experience that it is. Yet at the same time, I mean, That's the tricky part, is you want to enjoy every moment of it, but there's so many distractions that can happen. I mean, I know last Olympic Games, first time we were out, you know, we had Messi, Bolt, like we just wanted to go around and take pictures, and it's such an amazing thing, but at the same time, if you're doing that every day, you know, that's tiring your body, and that's so many different things. So, you know, John's bringing this in a couple of days earlier so we can take in the experience and create those memories, but yet at the same time, I think it's about us doing the job and, you know, making Canada proud. And when we step on the field, we know we've done everything. No stone is left unturned. And it's just we know what we're there for. We're there to be successful, hopefully bring home a medal, and win some games and not let like what happened, you know, this past week, you know, one great game and then the next game we're not there. So we're going to take it in. I mean, I'll be taking it all in, you know.
And putting it on the internet, I imagine. The KK well, cam so goes across the ocean.
There's so many restrictions. That's one other thing. I mean, there's something like in, as far as Twitter, as far as Facebook, there's a lot of restrictions when it comes to the Olympic Games. So the most we can do is just talk about our own experience, but we can't, like, I can't do my KK cam, that little video stuff that I love to do. I'm not allowed to do that during the Olympic Games because you're not allowed to take video footage of what's going on in the village, you know. So there's a lot of restrictions, but, you know, we'll find a way to make sure everybody knows how amazing the event is and how much fun we're having.
There's a lot of excitement about qualifying for the Olympics, obviously, but as I mentioned at the beginning, it has been quite a whirlwind week for yourself and for a number of your teammates on the women's national team. As most listeners will be aware, it was announced earlier this week that women's professional soccer, which you've been playing in for a number of years, will be suspending its 2012 season. Where were you and how did you find out about the news and how did you feel when you heard that?
It was the morning after we lost to the U.S., so it was already one of a downer days, and I woke up and literally read it, got an email saying what was going on, and it was just one of those things where I just stared at it, and I was like, really? You know, just so disappointed. And you know, frustrating after everything we'd been through a couple of months, for the past couple of months, and thinking that it was actually going to survive, it was actually going to make it. And, you know, just, you know, disappointed not only for myself, but for the young girls of the future. You know, just coming off of a couple of weeks where you're signing the autographs and you see these young girls and they're like, oh, my God, I want to be like you one day. You know, I mean, girls with tears, you know. It wasn't just like, oh, they'll be cool. I appreciate what you do. And you can see that. I could see the me in them. And, you know, I know how fortunate it was for me to have this opportunity to come straight out of college. You know, there's no way I'd be where I am today if I didn't have the opportunity of the WSA and the WPS. And, you know, I'm hoping it's just a suspension for a year, but to see that happen, it was a dagger. You know, it was something that I was hoping it wasn't true. But it is, and, you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, for me personally, I believe that, you know, everything happens for a reason, and, you know, with the Olympics coming up, I know I'm fortunate enough to have that to look forward to, but a lot of my peers, you know, I've spoken to some of them, and they're just devastated. They're like, well, I guess I'm done playing soccer, and it's so hard to hear that, you know, because they are great players, and they are people who are living out their dreams, and they are people who had dreams when they're younger, and, you know, for this to be the outcome as of right now, it's disappointing.
Now, does the loss of those games, does that affect your preparation for the Olympic Games one way or another?
The WPS games?
Right.
Obviously it does, but we're meeting. We're gonna chat with John over the next couple of days. I know he's gonna meet with several people to come up with a game plan. You know, because it affects a lot of, well, not a lot, but it affects some of our team. And, you know, the thing is for us all to be at peak come the time of the Olympics. And obviously, you know, he knew that there were going to be these games and we were going to be in great training environments and whatnot. So there's a lot of big decisions to be made over the next little bit, you know. You know, window was, I'm not sure if you guys know about the window for transfer, but that doesn't affect us because our contracts are being terminated, so we're just free agents at this point. So that was one good news, because initially I thought I had 24 hours to figure out what team I was going to go to. It was stressful. But, I mean, there's just a lot of big decisions. I mean, it's not a place you want to be in, especially as a goalkeeper. It's tough because that's one of the first positions that clubs fill in, and, you know, they fill that in quickly, and it's not like if somebody's there, they can go play left back and I'll hop in, you know. So It has to be the right fit. And again, with the priority being succeeding at the Olympics, it's not something you can just, like, just jump into. So it's a bit stressful, but, you know, I have faith that things will work out.
One of the big stories of the qualifying tournament was Sydney LaRue, who obviously and somewhat controversially chose to play for the Americans over the Canadians. And one of her reasons was that it makes financial sense to play on the American team where they get paid a living wage. Given what's happened, what kind of perspective do you have now as a Canadian player on her decision and on the status of Canadian players and what they get paid now that your league situation is so up in the air?
Well, you know, I'm proud every time I wear my Canadian jersey. You know, I think that, I mean, I couldn't imagine myself playing for any other country. You know, there's so much pride that comes with that. And I have to respect Sydney's decision because, you know, we're two different people, and the next person can be a different person. She had different circumstances, and she made that decision. She's a phenomenal player, and I think she has a lot of potential, and she'll be a name that we'll hear about a lot on the scene. You know, for me, I'm proud to be Canadian, and, you know, I think there's parts about her that probably are still proud to be Canadian, and, you know, because she made that choice, I know she's getting a lot of heat for it, but at the same time, I mean, I respect her as a player, and, you know, I respect her decision because I can't tell you everything that was going on to help her make that decision, you know, so.
Karina, as we said, you know, it's been a pretty tumultuous week for you, so maybe we can end it, you know, on a bit of a positive note, the same positive note that you ended Friday evening. Would you be willing to grace us with a little bit of Celine Dion's Power of Love?
When I have no voice and I have a cold.
Well, you can always use those as an excuse, though.
You know, I thought he was going to ask us to
start with from the beginning, but what line do you want me to sing? I'm not shy about anything.
I like that you're asking him to quote a line from the song right now. You're putting him on the spot.
I thought he was going to get us to all sing it together.
Well, how about that? Okay.
I don't think that's
No. I didn't want that.
But see, Grant, they've spent time, you know, looking at the lyrics and picking out their favorites, and really, it's not fair. Karina, look. I mean, the focus is not on me. You are the top flight player. I'm just some guy in a studio. Nobody wants to hear my singing voice.
Nice try. Okay, you know what? Since my favorite part is where we've changed the words, we're heading to London. I'll sing that part. My teammates are going to kill me. I mean, really? You're going to make me do this?
No.
I think so, yeah.
What are you guys going to do? Come on. Well, I'm embarrassing myself.
It's radio, so we'll just say that we're dancing.
Yeah, I'm... while you sing, we will dance.
Okay, I'm going to sing one line. And I'm going to do it well. Let me clear my sore throat that has nothing in it. Okay. We're heading for London. There you go. That was horrible.
Beautiful.
Excellent.
You see, you just lied to my face right there.
No, not to your face.
We lied to a microphone.
Guys, yeah.
That was so bad.
No, Karina, you would finish at least sixth in Canadian Idol. Mm-hmm. At least sixth.
And any
I heard that there's a Canadian Bachelorette.
Oh.
Is that what's coming up?
That's what Jody said in Sportsnet, so...
Well, this hints at a very saucy future for the Canadian women's national team.
Yeah, I think you guys should nominate me. This is what I'm thinking, since I just sang on your show.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, if there's anything we can do, if anyone knows how to get that going, nominate Karina LeBlanc for Canadian Bat... Is there, like, a Twitter hashtag that people can use or something?
I don't know. Let's start it up. You guys can start it up. I'll retweet that.
KK for Bachelorette, maybe?
There you go.
All right. If you're on the Twitter, get that going. You can follow her at Karina LeBlanc, and you can also see her live and in action at the London Olympic Games this summer. This has been Canadian Women's National Team goalkeeper Karina LeBlanc. Karina, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
All right, guys. Thanks for the support and love.
Thank you.
And making me sing on the show.
Well, no problem.
Our pleasure.
Bye.
Thank you to Karina for hanging in with us there, and thank you to you for hanging in with us thus far as we set off the top. Special edition of the show, a little bit of an extended edition with us missing next week. We figured we would get as much stuff into this episode of the show as we possibly could, but we're not done yet. Being creatures of habit, we will, of course, get into, as we always do, promotion relegation. We each pick a story we like to promote, and we each pick a story we don't like to relegate. So, Grant...
Yes.
As you sit here yawning in the Rogers studio at 1:11 a.m.,
okay,
I have no choice but to ask you,
all right,
who or what would you like to promote.
I'm going to do this with no talking points either.
Yeah, no, he's got no notes, nothing in front of him.
I'm going to promote An Jung-won, former Korean heartthrob and soccer player, who most people will remember as the guy who scored the golden goal in the 2002 World Cup that knocked Italy out of the competition.
Yep.
Now, this is not me having anything so much against Italy as it is the fact that this goal, I was in Seoul at the time, and this goal, so I was in the city of 20 million people, that was, you could go out onto the street while this game was being played and hear crickets chirping, and he scored this goal, An Jung-won, and the city literally blew the top off itself. I mean, I don't remember much about that night. I remember being in the back of a pickup truck with a bottle of soju, waving a Korean flag, yelling at people. I mean, and that about says it all. It was a hell of a party. It was a fantastic party. And I have An Jung-won to thank for that.
Grant, a couple things here.
Yeah.
First, for those maybe not familiar with Korean booze, soju is...
Korean booze.
All right. And second of all, is there any like recent hook here?
Yeah,
why are you bringing
supposed to be things from this week?
Yeah, not like
he's retiring. Did I not mention that?
No.
Oh,
you're just like, yeah, I was drunk in a pickup truck 10 years ago. What the hell does this have to do with anything?
1:11 a.m. He just retired.
1:12.
He retired. He retired, and that he had a press conference where he was crying in Seoul and retiring.
So with his retirement also went the dreams of a generation of excited Korean schoolgirls.
No, they can still dream about him.
So when you left Korea, it went the generation of dreams of, well, I got the order of the words wrong there.
Yeah, did you ever?
Moral story is, Grant, were you a Korean heartthrob?
No, I was not.
Will you soon
He's not Korean.
Will you soon be
exactly.
Yeah, but you can be a heartthrob no matter where you are. You could be an Indian heartthrob a month from now. You never know.
In my mind, I can be a heartthrob everywhere.
Well, that's not in any of the rest of our minds. So, Jamie, I'll move on to what's in your mind and possibly on some talking points in front of you and ask, who or what are you going to promote?
I'm going to promote a man who's currently on trial for tax evasion. And why wouldn't you?
As you do.
I'm promoting Harry Redknapp, manager of Tottenham FC, a team that I have a fairly intense and irrational dislike for. Hmm. And I'm promoting him not because he's on trial for tax evasion, which I think is a heinous crime against society, but I'm promoting him, I should say, because of his defense. The line of defense that he's chosen to take is the wonderful "I'm too stupid to commit this crime" line of defense. He's accused of kind of hiding a bunch of money that was given to him under the table. I'm guessing all of this.
Allegedly.
This is all alleged, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing as per my understanding. But yeah, money that was given to him by the chairman of Portsmouth when Harry Redknapp was the manager and director of football. Whatever. And basically, it's the kind of complicated moving around of money in a non-legal fashion. And basically,
allegedly,
Redknapp's defense is, I am completely and utterly disorganized. I write like a 2-year-old, and I can't spell. That's a direct quote from the trial.
That's how you instill confidence in a manager.
This is ridiculous. He goes on to just like completely just bash himself and basically say that he's more or less a useless human being who's, you know, it's just not good at anything involving money or, you know,
writing.
Yeah, writing, organization, possibly even football. So I'm promoting him for just saying I could be a criminal or I can be a moron, and he's gone moron on this one.
So this could set the legal precedent whereby excessive stupidity could be used as a valid legal defense.
It seems to be that that's what he's going for.
Yes. All right. Well, I think if that's
there's also the the defense. I have never written a letter in my life.
What?
And he's blaming things on his accountant by saying my accountant, quote, runs my life. So yeah, he apparently was writing a column for the Sun newspaper and hadn't realized that he wasn't paid for that for a full 18 months.
Wow.
Yeah. So obviously he's not a proper freelance journalist.
not getting paid for media work, that's unheard of.
Wa ba bum ba dum bum.
Anyway, on to my promotion for the week. What am I promoting? Oh, I am promoting Bob Bradley, former head coach of the U.S. men's national team, and he of the stoic windbreaker, as we referred to last week. He is currently the head coach of the Egyptian men's national team, and of course there's been quite a bit of turmoil in that country over the last number of days with the riot that killed dozens of people following a top flight Premier League game there. And Jamie, you turn me on to this story, so you know if I'm dodgy on some of the details, you can fill them in here. But essentially, Bob Bradley, rather than kind of shying away from the attention that this would obviously bring upon the country, decided that he was going to go out and take part in a public march, kind of denouncing the violence that had come out of this game that obviously resulted in quite a number of deaths and injuries. And this was seen as, you know, something quite daring for a foreigner in the country to do because, you know, as we've seen in Egypt in recent months, those in charge are definitely not afraid of cracking down on people making their voices known in the public square at certain times. So I suppose Mr. Bradley is worthy of a promotion in this event. I have thought on occasions that that both he and his son vaguely resemble Lex Luthor, but in this particular case, he comes out like a bit of a Superman.
Yeah. I think it's perfectly commendable.
Did I miss anything there, Jamie? Am I kind of botching the point?
He has literally risked his own personal safety and that of his, not that he's risking it, but his wife was also with him marching with these protesters the day after 74 people were killed in a horrible riot, and they're protesting, you know, and there's all kinds of political turmoil, as we all know. So for him to not take the easy road, and which no one would question if he just took his family and got the heck out of there, to stand up for what he believes in and to, you know, speak out on behalf of anti-violence, that's very commendable, I think.
Heck yeah. To heck with violence.
Yeah, and to heck with hair. Go Bob Bradley.
Grant?
Yes, indeed.
You are fading fast, so I'm going to ask you expeditiously, who or what would you like to relegate this week?
I am going to relegate this fellow who chained himself, or sorry, didn't chain himself, he handcuffed himself to a goalpost last week.
Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
I have, yes. I have seen it. I don't know if you were just asking me, but so this guy handcuffed himself to a goalpost in the Everton-Manchester City game. And apparently he's kind of like a professional protester. He's upset because his daughter was fired from Ryanair. So he like barricaded himself on top of like a hotel roof. He charged onto a racetrack when the horses were. It's all the same guy. His name's John Foley, allegedly.
His name is allegedly John Foley.
According to what I read, they don't know.
You're pointing at me like I'm the like legal cover. Okay. Yeah. Allegedly he did all these things.
Allegedly the person who did these things was John Foley, but that doesn't matter. What I'm more concerned about is this was raised by a writer in The Guardian. I think her name was Laura Barnett. It doesn't matter, she's not listening and never will be. she suggested that is this going to
allegedly
she suggested the fact that this might be sort of the new streaking. So instead of like streaking onto running onto the pitch nude, people are now going to start handcuffing themselves to everything. I'm now worried that if the two are combined, we're nude people start handcuffing themselves to stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen now. I don't know how you get the handcuffs out there if you're nude, but
well, I guess
they'll figure
just,
out a way.
If you're sprinting out there.
So now what I'm concerned about is this huge rash of nude people handcuffing themselves. It hasn't happened. You're inventing it.
You don't want to mention nude people and rash in the same sentence also.
This is
the old Okinawa rash.
This is how human society progresses. Planking, owling, T-bowing, cuffing, and now nude cuffing.
I think that worthy of a bit of a side promotion is the people at Manchester City Stadium who managed to get the bolt cutters out really fast and get, I mean, who knows, hey, I've got bolt cutters, and who's on the bolt cutter beat who's just been standing around for years waiting for someone to chain themselves to something?
Actually, no, never mind. I'm not even going to.
Well, whatever.
I'm not even going to bring that up.
And there's
up,
also the crowd that shouted, quote, you fat bastard, in unison at that poor guy for quite some time.
I don't don't know if he's a poor guy, but
all right,
he did choose to run onto the field and somewhat chubby himself to the goal.
They spotted his chubbiness and immediately just pounced right on it.
Keyed right in on it.
Yeah, frankly, based on this pattern of behavior, I'm guessing that a little bit of pudginess is not the most pressing physical or psychological issue that this gentleman has to deal with for the rest of his life. But Jamie,
yes,
you have no such issues, thankfully, that we know of, because you're living healthy this year for your New Year's resolution.
Sure.
So I'll turn to you and ask, who or what would you like to relegate?
I'm going to relegate Stoke City. I don't even know if he's a backup or backup to the backup. Let's call him third string keeper, Carlo Nash. There's a very commendable initiative put on by the Premier League called Premier League Reading Stars, and it's just basically wheeling out a few Premier League players to schools and try and get kids to learn how to read. And it's just one of these things that professional sports leagues and sports teams do. And part of the initiative was to have a player from each team in the Premier League pick a book that they think that they would recommend to adults. I'm assuming for literacy purposes, maybe adults who are not quite literate.
Like Harry Redknapp?
Yeah, apparently. And then pick a children's book as well. So Carlo Nash's choice for a children's book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl. That's perfectly fine. Carlo Nash's pick for the adult book, say you want to learn how to read, would be Family Adventures in Style by, wait a minute, Dr. Jill Nash and Carlo Nash. He's chosen as a, here's a good book to learn how to read with, his own highfalutin, luxury lifestyle, very expensive travel guide for families. I mean, these books you don't read these books in a I'm learning how to read kind of way unless you want,
you want to do some luxury high travel.
If you can't read and you know, the Côte d'Azur and Louis Vuitton handbag are the kind of things that really enter your vocabulary, you are a very unique person who has the need for high-priced luxury family travel, but yet can't quite read.
Jamie, Jamie, you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, correct?
No, I know that Zoptimers
right.
couldn't.
All right, let's.
I'm just saying.
We're gonna miss the subway.
We're
gonna miss the subway.
He could pick any adult book in the history of
and he
of
wants
printed.
To do a bit of self-promotion.
Yeah, but this is just not the kind of book. And I will say, as an Arsenal fan, I like this, just all things up front, Theo Walcott did pick as a children's book the children's book that he wrote. But it is still an appropriate book.
How do you know? Have you
the
read
question.
It?
Theo Walcott
no, but at least
wrote
it is
a children's book?
It's a children's
yeah, actually,
book.
That's a good point. Theo Walcott wrote a children's book?
Yeah, let's see if I can find it here.
Okay, all right. Well, you're doing that.
No, it's called TJ and the Hat Trick. It's a soccer book for children. That just kind of makes sense. And that's a bit of, it's shameless self-promotion, but at least it's relevant. It's not just like I wrote a restaurant review, and I'm going to put that up for adult literacy.
If I wrote a restaurant review, I'd be pumping that everywhere I could.
You're a published writer, Grant, for God's sake.
Okay, well, no one ever asked me to recommend an adult
Grant
book.
An right. adult book, Grant?
I mean, I think you'd have a few
which
recommendations.
Which is probably a good thing.
Naked Cuffing by Grant Surridge. Now in hardcover.
Is this the rash
of
edition?
Naked Cuffing.
Jesus. What the hell am I relegating? I don't even know. I think I'm going to relegate this discussion about Naked Cuffing that's coming out of Grant. But but for the sake of it, I don't know if I have a direct relegation here, because I don't want to relegate a company that is contributing money to Canadian soccer as a whole. But I think I'm relegating the discussion, which is a discussion we had a few weeks ago about the nomenclature around the Canadian Championship. A couple of weeks ago, the erstwhile Neutralite Canadian Championship became the Amway Canadian Championship, and this kind of irked a number of fans who said, nope, I'm only going to call it the Voyageurs Cup from now on, which is completely within everybody's right. On the one hand, you've got a company that's willing to give money to the Canadian Soccer Association to fund our programs. They just want to put their name on something and let them do it. On the other hand, it's a little bit misguided because Neutralite is an Amway brand. And I don't know. I mean, someone somewhere along the line at Amway probably should have thought, maybe people supporting this Canadian championship thing may, I don't know, take a little bit of umbrage to having a name like Amway, which, if I'm not mistaken, is a truncated version of American Way. associated with a Canadian championship. I don't know. Maybe they figure we don't have any nationalism up here, which is usually accurate. But I don't know. I mean, people are entitled to call the tournament whatever they want. Broadcasters will call it the Amway Championship because they're contractually obligated to. We're not, and I'm not, so I'm going to call it the Voyageurs Cup. Jamie, yes?
I have something. This
breaking news this from the interwebs.
Breaking news straight off of Wikipedia, because I've just Googled Amway to find out if it does stand for American Way, and I don't know, it doesn't say. But the point is,
thanks for the update.
It was founded in 1959 by J. Van Andel and Richard DeVos.
Ooh.
I think we're seeing a bit of a tie-in here, possibly.
Are you insinuating that he may be connected to Jason DeVos?
Yeah, former Canadian men's national team captain and Gold Cup winner, Jason DeVos.
Well, if there is a familial connection there, I think that...
They just called the DeVos Cup.
Well,
that actually would be kind of a good name.
Yeah, actually, that's not a half bad idea, Grant.
All right, well, there you go. Strange ideas you get at 1:26 in the morning.
Grant, I've heard some of the ideas you've had at 1:26 in the morning.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Actually, I've heard much worse.
99 times out of 100, they're not going to be useful, but...
Hey, every once in a while, even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
Exactly.
That is going to bring us to the end of this show.
I do not like how you said nut there.
Nut.
Yeah, that was...
Actually, no, it's not going to bring us to the end of the show. It's going to bring us to Taste the Trivia, weekly trivia challenge, blah, blah, blah. No one's listening anymore. So if you listen to the show, you know by now, weekly trivia challenge. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/somecanadianguys, to take part. The winner of last week's question, I don't even really remember what the question was, which is my own failing. Old friend of the show, Fred, was the one to correctly answer it. So he has provided us with the question for this week. And there actually is going to be a prize on the line this time out, so... Everyone get your thinking caps on.
We're gonna back send some of those prizes, right?
Yeah, we'll figure something out for some folks.
What's the prize for this week?
Because
we've got options.
We do have options. We'll figure it out, but it'll be something nice.
No, we gotta tell people what the prize is before we make them do stuff.
I'm not making anyone do anything. It's a free country.
All right, just pick one or the other.
All right. If you would like to be the beneficiary of a nice new Umbro Canada scarf, True North Strong and Free.
There we go.
Then listen carefully, and if you have the answer to this question, send it in. Three-part question from Fred. In 2004 Olympic qualifying, this is for on the women's side, who led Canada in scoring, number one? How old was she, number two? And what university did she attend? Three-part question. We need three pieces of information. If you have that information, head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you're the first one with the correct answer, you will be the beneficiary of that prize, and you will be entitled to provide us with the question for the next edition of Taste the Trivia, which will be heard in 2 weeks' time, because as we said off the top, we're taking a bit of a break here. We're going to reevaluate what's going on, come back with some special guest hosts. Grant will be in India. You will all be at home listening to this, I imagine. In the time being, there are plenty of ways you can get your Canadian footy fix. Jamie, you've got some stuff going up on sportsnet.ca, I imagine, yes?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, well, that's a good hype job.
We'll all wait and see what happens, including me.
All right. Grant, well, I mean, you'll be in India, but...
What was the name of that? I can't even remember. My new hometown team.
Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. Sporting Club.
Okay, well, maybe I'll check in and tell you guys how they're doing.
Yeah, and if they end up playing against Tater Torterson's team, let us...
That's a totally different competition.
They're in different leagues.
Are they?
Get your facts straight.
Come on, man. You would never last in India.
No, I wouldn't. But a place that always gets its facts straight is CanadianSoccerNews.com, except when it doesn't. But head over there for lots of interesting news and analysis for me and lots of other people there. You can also follow the lot of us on Twitter. I am at my name, Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato. Grant, where are you?
I am at SCG Grant.
Jamie, where are you?
I always find it harder to spell your name after you've spelled it out like that, because you do it really quickly. But my Twitter is at Doyle_Jamie.
Can you spell it out?
No, because it's going to confuse me now.
Well, it's a pretty straightforward name. People will figure it out. They will also figure out how to find us again in 2 weeks' time. We'll be back on February 16th, and we'll be, two-thirds of us at least, yammering at you again then. Till then, we are, as always, some Canadian guys talking about soccer.